Now, just recently, we've seen carbon dioxide levels hit an incredibly important milestone. They've passed the 400 parts per million mark, and yet the often agreed at safe so-called level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is 350 parts per million. Last time carbon dioxide levels were this high, humans weren't alive. What's that all mean? Well, to tell us more, Erwin Jackson, Deputy CEO of the Climate Institute, joins me on the phone. Good morning, Erwin.
Good morning.
Now, tell me a little bit about what that 400 parts per million threshold means and why it's such a significant marker.
Well, as you say, it's a symbolic threshold because we're sort of entering levels which of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere which humans have never experienced. It's also important because it's sort of around the level, very close to the level, which, if sustained over a long period of time, would see warming of the atmosphere greater than 1.5 degrees, which is what the scientific community, governments around the world have agreed is probably a level which we probably want to avoid. So we're heading into very dangerous territory. The climate is already having, climate change is already having fairly severe impacts, and unless we start to reduce atmospheric concentration through time, we're actually going to see even greater impacts into the future.
So can we make a reversal on this?
We can. It's a question really of political will. All of the scientific assessments that have been done show us that we can actually avoid warming of 2 degrees. Also give a reasonable, well, some would say unreasonable chance of limiting warming to less than 1.5 degrees by the end of the century. But it really means that we have to start decarbonising the electricity sector in particular very rapidly, improving the efficiency of our buildings, and also finding ways to, for other sectors, to contribute to reducing emissions, whether that be in the land sector where we're planting forests or avoiding deforestation, or in industrial processes where we improve the efficiency of operations and move to new kinds of technologies to have zero emissions.
Look, I think for many people listening, they might think, well, 2 degrees, that can't make that much of an impact, can it? But what would that do to our climate?
Well, we did an assessment, for example, earlier in the year looking at the difference in Australia of a 1.5 or even 2 degree world. And what we find is that under 2 degree scenarios, we essentially move into territory in terms of the climate's extremes that we experience, whether they be extreme temperatures, extreme rainfall, droughts, storms, etc., which are really outside the human experience. And even at 1.5 degrees, you start to see the very extreme heat waves that we experience, which in recent times have killed hundreds of people, helped fuel things like the Black Saturday bushfires. they extend, those kinds of heat waves extend for up to a month longer under a 1.5 degree scenario. So we've got to think about it in the context of that this is a change to the average global climate, which has then knock-on effects to our broader weather systems. And just to give another common analogy, you know, when we were in the midst of the last ice age and there was kilometres of ice above places like New York and Tasmania was connected to Australia, mainland Australia, then the world was only about 5 degrees warmer. So even very small changes in average global climate can have really big impacts on natural systems.
Is there a tipping point where it's just all over bar the shouting?
Well, there certainly are a range of tipping points in the climate system. It's hard to identify where they are exactly because, of course, our understanding of the climate system isn't perfect. Mm. For example, at 1.5 degrees global temperature change, there are some indications that it would cause long-term and irreversible deglaciation of the Greenland ice sheet, which would raise global sea levels by around 5 to 6 metres over many centuries. Certainly for coral reefs, which provide food to, you know, millions of people around the world, are important for tourism and local economies, etc. Above 2 degrees or around 2 degrees, they certainly wouldn't exist as we currently know them. At a global level, 1.5 degrees, they might be able to be have some level of adaptation. And certainly above 2 degrees, we start getting into territories where some very large risks start to really become very, start to emerge, whether that be the complete loss of the Amazon rainforest, from bushfires, extreme drought, through to the very rapid acceleration of ice sheet melting in Antarctica, which is, which locks up a huge amount of the world's water, fresh water. And if that West Antarctic ice sheet really started to deglaciate, then you'd be locking in many, many metres of sea level rise over many, many centuries.
With the wealth of, you know, evidence at hand that this is a very real, I'm somewhat mystified by how slowly we have been to react in many ways.
Well, there is actually some signs to hope. You know, we are seeing at a global level some indication that global energy sector emissions are starting to stabilise, and indeed they've been pretty flat over the last couple of years, and that's been driven by this boom in the global investment in renewable energy that we've seen around the world. You know, China now is the world's biggest investor in renewable energy. We have seen major investments in renewable energy in countries throughout Europe, in the United States, and it's now what we see is that around the world about double, there's about twice as much investment in renewable energy as there is in coal and gas-fired electricity generation at a global level. And indeed, energy sector emissions in the United States and China have actually been falling. In contrast, you've got Australia, where our energy sector emissions are actually increasing. When we removed the carbon price, they started to go up, and we've also seen major uncertainty in the renewable energy investment sector. So that sector is essentially not following global trends, and we're falling behind both in terms of the trajectory of our emissions, but in terms of the investments in renewable energy that other countries are taking advantage of.
Now, when we're talking about just sort of limiting to 1.5 degrees, which is quite an incredible goal, is there ever do we have a chance of actually reversing this in the next, you know, few hundred years? Could we actually not just limit how bad the damage is, but actually fix it?
Well, we are actually going to have to do that because even as we currently understand it, where the world will probably warm above 1.5 degrees. You know, if then this is why the 400 parts per million threshold is in some respects important, because if we were going to avoid 1.5 degrees, we'd essentially have to stop all emissions from the burning of fossil fuels and other major sources of emissions within the next 5 to 6 years. To stop atmospheric concentrations moving above levels which would trigger a 1.5 degree warming. So what we're going to have to do is actually go up before we go above 1.5 degrees and then come back to that by the end of the century, we hope. And the way that we do that is not just limiting emissions, but also implementing technologies that can draw carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And you'd even need to do that probably even if you were trying to avoid a 2 degree scenario. So there are things like, obviously, there's natural systems that can do that. They're not necessarily safe because they're subject to bushfires and other things. Mm-hmm. And then there's also more new technologies that are emerging which can actually capture CO2 from the atmosphere and then store it geologically. And that involves things like direct air capture, where technologies can capture CO2 from the air and then it's pumped underground, through to technologies which like bioenergy and carbon capture and storage, which basically involve the use of plant material and waste, which has carbon dioxide stored in them, which have taken CO2 out of the atmosphere. That's then used in a power station, but the CO2 is then captured and stored underground. And those kinds of technologies are going to be needed if we are going to limit warming to 1.5 or even 2 degrees.
Owen, thank you very much. Thank you very much for talking to Breakfast this morning.
No worries.